Time for This Week in Chicago History. Anna DeVlanta is joining us now, and we'll start with some broadcasting history. Anna?
Big week in television history, Bob, and good morning to you. 1986, this week, September 8th to be exact, the Oprah Winfrey Show made its national debut. And just like the local Chicago show before it, it was an instant success. Remember, she came out of the gates with AM Chicago on ABC 7 and beat Phil Donahue in the first ratings book, which was like crazy at the time. She hit the national airwaves and was a dominant force right from the start. You know, Oprah was very close, you'll know this, Bob, with Roger Ebert and his wife Chaz. And Oprah said it was on his advice and prodding that convinced her that she should go national and she should pursue syndication. So she was not only a star audience is related to, but she defined this whole new genre of daytime talk, deeply personal stories that people would share with a national audience, often accompanied by doctors and therapists to give it context, with Oprah driving these very, real conversations. A lot of shows emulated it after, or copied it, I guess you could say, and moved into different directions with like Springer and stuff like that. But she also had plenty of self-help and advice-style shows. We pulled her very first episode when she went national. She had her featured guest was the author of a book, How to Marry the Man, Woman of Your Choice. Here's a clip we pulled. Listen to Oprah's energy.
I'm Oprah Winfrey, and welcome to the very first National Oprah Winfrey Show! Today, how to find a husband, how to find a wife, and if you already have a mate, how to keep the one you have from all of us single people who want him. My first guest, though, has one of the most controversial techniques to meeting a partner you will ever hear. Some of you will no doubt be shocked. She charges $95 a piece, that's for each one of them, of her two books, How to Marry the Man of Your Choice and How to Marry a Superior Woman, and promises if you haven't met and married that perfect man or woman within 3 years, she will give your money back, if you can find her, Margaret Kent.
And, of course, we also copied Oprah, Anna. That's why we give away a card to every member of our audience here every morning.
It reminds you when she said, this is the Oprah Winfrey Show. You get a car.
Yeah,
you get a car.
Exactly.
Like, whoa. 46 million viewers 20 years later and 134 countries around the world. So there you go.
This week in 1973, Harold Washington wasn't the mayor, but he wielded some influence, didn't he?
So important in getting this to happen, Bob. You're right. 1973, Illinois became the very first state in the country to commemorate Dr. Martin Luther King and his legacy with a state holiday. It was 5 years after his assassination when it happened, and this passionate campaign spearheaded by then state senator Harold Washington was what made it happen. You know, this is 10 years before he was mayor, and he was able to, you know, muster up the support in legislature to get them to introduce a bill. He introduced the bill. They signed the bill, passed both the House and the Senate, but then he still needed to get Governor Walker's backing at the time in order to make it official state holiday. And he circulated petitions all across the state. He got a lot of people to get signatures that basically called out Governor Walker, urging him to take action and make this happen. And he did. Mm-hmm. But then when Washington became a congressman, he made the same press to lawmakers nationally to say, let's make this a federal holiday. And it was one of his first moves. And sure enough, President Ronald Reagan signed off on it, and it became a national holiday.
I forgot all about Harold's role in that. Also in 1973, this week in 73, an unknown politician made some news. Tell us about Dan Walker.
Speaking of Governor Walker, Bob, 1973, totally unknown. He had zero name recognition, nobody knew him. Everyone thought he didn't have a chance. And he completed a 1,200-mile trek across the state of Illinois, literally walked across the state, Bob, 1,197 miles on foot, greeting voters. Some didn't know who the heck he was, but he showed up anyway in every town across the state, pretty much. At the time, he was getting zero media coverage and, like I say, zero name recognition. So this is what he decided to do. There was this quick blurb in the Tribune I saw that the headline when he first announced his candidacy. Dan Walker enters the race, but is he walking or running for governor? I mean, they were suggesting this guy was just limping in and nothing was going to happen. But that changed everything because his walk and his name was Walker. Walker, and he was walking, and it all kind of worked, and people liked that he was meeting him and, you know, showing up face to face. Here's Dan Walker talking about that moment in his political career.
When you spend 4 months walking 1,200 miles through a state like Illinois, you learn to listen to the things that are on people's minds. To a lot of people in this state, government is a joke, an ugly backdoor operation that has a lot more to do with private greed than with public service. Racetrack stock for public officials, no-show jobs which plead our tax money, millions of dollars for political roads instead of schools and homes and hospitals. And too many of us think it's inevitable that we can't make state government something to be proud of. I don't believe it. I wouldn't have taken that walk if I thought the people of Illinois were helpless in the face of corruption and waste. That's why I'm running for governor. Because if the people I met and talked with and the people who are fed up with the lies and the dishonesty stand together, then no machine can stop them. We can give the people back their government.
If you're fed up with your tax dollars paying for their scandals, join Dan Walker.
It worked, didn't it?
It worked, but, you know, it's funny because he's all about clean government, and, of course, he will forever be remembered as the second Illinois governor to be indicted and sent to prison. He was involved in a fraudulent lending practice thing with savings and loans after office, but still, nonetheless, indicted and later sent to prison.
Yes, joining the ranks of Otto Kerner, George Ryan, Rod Blagojevich.
Unforgettable. That's what you are.
The unforgettable Nat King Cole. And a lot of people don't realize that he grew up in Chicago, didn't he, Anna?
Yeah, I don't know, Bob. Not one that I knew myself, but I was looking into this. Such a truly unforgettable song, too. I mean, just, my God.
That clings to me.
So he grew up in Chicago, moved here when he was four from Montgomery, Alabama, Bob. And it's Chicago, you know, that shaped him as a musician. You know, he loved to go to the clubs and sneak in even when he was young, he said, and see some of the prominent musicians, jazz musicians at the time. But he even joined the Bud Billiken club band when he was a kid. And he was sponsored by the Chicago Defender, and he was very into music. His father, a preacher, they eventually settled in Bronzeville. His mother was the church organist, and he learned to play the piano from her, so sang in the church choir. He's just a student of music, just loved it. He played jazz, blues, gospel, and studied classical music as well. All of that, I think, you hear in many of his songs. Just an incredible history, but dropped out of DeSable High School, became a professional musician, and really hasn't looked back. Never looked back after that. I love that duet he did with his daughter Natalie. Remember how they created it even after his death?
Mm-hmm.
Just a beautiful song that never gets old.
And the original done this week in 1951. Now, this next story, I love this because for years and years I impressed people because I was the only one who knew the name of William McKinley's assassin, Leon Czolgosz. Don't ask me why I remembered that. There was some book I read on assassins, but I impressed people at parties with that little tidbit.
That is one. I had to practice the pronunciation of that before because I did not know that name. I kind of knew that this had happened. But
you see how that just rolls off my tongue. I've said it so many times. But it was this week in 1901 that it happened, right?
Yes. 1901, a nationwide hunt was underway for the person considered the most dangerous woman in America. President William McKinley had been shot, later died of his injuries. And the person they believed was responsible, Bob, at the time was Emma Goldman. She was a prominent anarchist, often held rallies in Chicago, lived here for some time, and the Fed zeroed in on her as the key suspect. She had, done a lot of public anti-government rants and talked about removing the president, and they believe she was near McKinley in the area when he was shot. So, true story, September 8th, 1901, the Feds raided a house on Sheffield near Wrigley, arrested Emma Goldman in big fashion, lots of coverage of the time, and she was about to face the death penalty when they realized it was actually your guy, Leon Czolgosz, who was a follower of Emma Goldman's.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was eventually put away for McKinley's assassination.
Yeah.
We can all impress our friends now with that.
Yeah, and look it up. I believe it was Leon F. Czolgosz, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, my gosh, it gets better.
Finally, the birth of candy corn in Chicago this week in 1953.
The Brock Candy Company, iconic Chicago company, debuted candy corn. Wasn't officially invented by Brock. It was the Wonderly Company, the founder of there, and he sold his recipe to the Jelly Belly Company. But no one really did much with it until Brock took a hold of candy corn. Chances are, if you eat candy corn this October or any time in the next season, it's candy corn season, Bob. 86% of the market is controlled by Brock. By the way, do you like candy corn, Bob?
I do like candy corn, and I enjoy biting off the little white tip and pretending that somebody knocked my tooth out. I have fun with that.
That takes you back. It takes me back to when I was a kid. We used to play with that stuff, too. I don't know why it's become such a divisive thing on social media, but
I don't understand that.
See what people say.
Yeah, they have different flavors of it now, but it's very controversial all of a sudden, right?
People say it tastes like sugary crayons, the ones who don't like it. And the ones who don't like it, they really don't like it. And they make their voices known this time of year. So watch out for those people.
Anna DeBlondis, more next Wednesday. Thanks, Anna. Have a good day.
See you, Bob.